Hello and welcome to Spoilers, this first introduction to the play The Life and Death of Jack Straw. Following are some introductory notes and a plain text recording of the dialogue, a plain text being the first cut edit of our full cast audio recording. It has all the text, but no SFX, no Foley, and it's the edit we use to hunt out textual errors, retakes, or cuts. So it's not perfect, and we may change the take and the text for the final thing. If you want to just enjoy our production, stop listening now and wait for the release. Or if you're listening in the future, look for the full cast episode further up the podcast list. Seriously, this is an exercise that some listeners won't enjoy. If it ain't for you, move on. But if you're still listening, let's enter spoiler land. Welcome to the spoilers for Jack Straw, Act 3, Scene 1. Now, I should note at this point that the original text has no scene divisions, and it is possible to blur the lines between some of the action here. So this episode is going up to the general exit after the parley, before the scenes with Nobbs and Tom Miller. For the first time, both sides are on stage together, which gives us some limitations as to doubling, because up till now, either side could have played the other. So those who are absent silent are doubleable, which actually means this play can be condensed down to actually quite a small cast for the most part. But of course, crowd scenes do diminish the fewer actors you have. Anyway, enter the King, and his advisers are, in this scene, the Lord Mayor and Sir John Newton. Nobody else gets a name check. Certainly not anyone of name. There are mentioned sergeants, guard, gentlemen, but that's about it. And the King, helpfully, says all the named characters' names as the scene starts. Now, I know that's a thing, generally. It's useful for me, as it means I don't have to add it in myself. But it does actually feel slightly odd here. I don't know if that's possibly just me. It feels like a line that's been added in for this version of the script, not a natural element of the original text. That is possibly projection, but anyway. The King can see the rebels making a mess of his realm, and he is not impressed. If in Act 1 everyone was at a remove, in Act 3 everyone is crammed together and can see each other's shit.
Sir Newton and Lord Mayor, this wrong that I am offered, this open and unnatural injury, a king to be thus hardly handled of his own people and no other foes, but such as have been brought up and bred in his own bosom, nourished with his tender care.
He is not happy. The Lord Mayor, and this officially is the first time we've met him, you will recognise the voice from earlier, but technically this is his first appearance, he tells the king to remember this moment later on. Take it all in.
It shall become your grace, most gracious lord, to bear the mind in this afflicted time as other kings and lords have done before. Armed with sufferance and magnanimity, the one to make you resolute for chance, the other forward in your resolution.
He really wants the king to get these rebels. He goes on to list everything else the rebels have done.
The greatest wrong this rout hath done, your grace, amongst many other wicked parts, is in frighting your worthy lady mother, making foul slaughter of your noblemen, burning up books and matters of records, defacing houses of hostility, St. John's in Smithfield, the Savoy and such like, and beating down, like wolves, the better sort.
Beating down the better sort. The better sort. You know, like you, my lord. And having bigged up the scale of the danger of the rebels, he points out the dangers to the king, who hasn't got many men with him.
Why comes your grace into Smithfield near the crew, unarmed and guarded with so small a train?
If clemency may win their raging minds to civil order, I'll approve it first. They shall perceive a coming quiet wise, accompanied with the Lord Mayor here alone. besides our guard that doth attend on us.
So the play is highlighting the bravery and naivety of the king at this stage, important later on. And I also wonder if there's some alteration here, because if the Lord Mayor is talking to the king, why would the king reply to the mayor with this line?
Accompanied with the Lord Mayor here alone.
Because that sounds like he's talking to somebody else, Newton perhaps, because he's there. So perhaps the last three lines of the mayor should be said by Newton, jumping in over the mayor. Otherwise it's a bit odd. Again, possibly projecting here. Perhaps the text is fine and it's all perfectly reasonable. Anyway, the mayor tries again, or for the first time, to get the king to take some sort of armed guard with him.
May it please your grace that I shall raise the streets to guard your majesty through Smithfield as you walk.
But the king is having none of it.
As you walk.
No, Lord Mayor, 'twill make them more outrageous and be a mean to shed a world of blood.
It's true. It's a shrewd enough move in its own way. Turning up to the meeting tooled up might go down badly. But anyway, back to the plan.
But this is the place I have appointed them to hear them speak, and have ventured to come among this foul unruly crew. And lo, my lord, see where the people comes.
And enter Jack Straw, Wat Tyler, Tom Miller, Parson Ball and Hob Carter. Jack immediately tells his people to hang back, mirroring the king's call to have a single voice to speak with him.
My masters, this is the king. Come away, 'tis he that we would speak with all.
Newton, desire that one may speak for all to tell the sum of their demand at full.
So Newton perhaps steps forward and shouts across the field / stage to Jack, etc.
My masters, you that are the especial men, his majesty requires you all by me, that one may speak and tell him your demand. And gently here he lets you know by me, he is resolved to hear him all at large.
And the king, either taking charge or undermining his own authority a bit, chips in.
Aye, good, my friends, I pray you heartily. Tell us your minds as madly as you can, and we will answer you so well to all, as you shall not mislike in anything.
By which point Jack has stepped forward.
We come to revenge your officer's ill demeanour, and though we have killed him for his knavery, now we be gotten together, we will have wealth and liberty!
Wealth and liberty! And liberty!
Massive crowd roars, but the king holds his nerve.
It is enough, believe me, if you will. For as I am your true succeeding prince, I swear by all the honour of my crown, you shall have liberty and pardon all.
But here any hope of an orderly conversation collapses as Wat Tyler steps up.
As God have given it and your lawful king.
Air will be pinched with poverty to dig our meat and victuals from the ground that are as worthy of good maintenance as any gentleman your grace doth keep. We will be kings and lords within ourselves and not abide the pride of tyranny.
The king tries to take back control, but his tone is off and it opens the door for back chat.
Tyranny.
I pray thee, fellow, what countryman art thou?
It skills not much. I am an Englishman.
Marry, sir, he is a Kentishman and hath been my scholar ere now.
And this back chat really tees off the Lord Mayor, who does an aside, the first, I think, of two.
Little good manners hath the villain learned to use his lord and king so barbarously.
The king tries again to regain control, and under the cries of the crowd, gives in.
Well, people, ask you any more than to be free and have your liberty?
Wealth and liberty!
Then take my word, I promise it to you all, and hear my general pardon now forthwith. Under seal and letters patents to perform the same. Let every man betake him to his home. And with what speed our clerks can make dispatch, your pardons and your letters patents shall be forthwith sent down in every shire.
So the king is going to make a formal undertaking to do as the rebels ask. Pardon the rebels so long as they go home. Not an unclever little bit of politicking. One group take this offer happily, Hob Carter and the Essex men, though whether everyone takes this as a win is another matter.
Marry, I thank your grace. Ob Carter and the Essex men will home again. And we take your word.
We believe you all, and thank you all. And presently we will commandment give that all this business may be quickly ready.
So Hobcart has agreed for the rebels, and the king and his train exit. Jack, however, is not so happy.
I tell thee what, this is not that I would have. I come for more than to be answered thus, and if the Essex men will needs be gone, content. Let them go suck their mams at home.
So Jack, not being a desperately well-constructed man here, a bit of gendered vitriol there, but it's the next line that really shows that this is a different Jack from Act 1, Scene 1.
I came for spoil, and spoil I'll have.
Wow. I mean, is that the limit of their ambitions, really? The rebellion has taken a misstep. The righteous cause has been blackened, and in this exchange, Nobbs throws in a half a side that is picked up by the crew, and Nobbs has to justify himself to the group.
Do what thou wilt, Jack. I will follow thee.
How? And if it be to the gallows?
Why? That is the worst.
And if faith that is, sure, but if you will be ruled by me, trust not to his pardon, for you die. Every mother's son, but captains, go forward, as we have begun.
My masters, the boy speaks wisely. I've read this in Cato. Ad concilium anticum vocaris. Take good counsel while it is given.
Content, boy. We will be ruled by thee.
And they go off to do what? It's a good question. The momentum of the rebellion is lost. Going forward will get them nowhere. The script says, exeunt omnes, except Nobbs, and he is then met by Tom Miller, which we're going to look at next time as a separate scene. However, I suggest there is actually a cut here. The mechanics and the tone and the pace of the next scene do not fit as a crossover with this scene. It's really quite untidy dramaturgy otherwise, but we'll go over the issues of that next time. So I personally believe that here the scene ends, everybody exits, something happens before the re-entry of Nobbs and Tom Miller. Because otherwise it's just everyone sort of wanders off and everybody sort of wanders back on again in a slightly untidy way. But if you have any thoughts about my brief breakdown of this scene, or if you have any disagreements with my thoughts, or if I am in plain demonstrable error, let me know. I might re-edit based on your suggestions. Email us at admin@beyondshakespeare.org or give us a buzz on Twitter @beyondshakes. Or you can support our work by becoming a Patreon. Patrons get to vote for the plays we work on next. Go to patreon.com/beyondshakespeare and get involved. But that's it from this spoiler episode. The full cast super deluxe edit will be coming anon. But till then, here's the plain text of Act 3, Scene 1 of The Life and Death of Jack Straw, performed by Polly Hall as Jack Straw, Lee MacDonald as Wat Tyler, Hugh Willapooley as Tom Miller, Andy Barrett as Hob Carter, Sarah Golding as Nobbs, Hayden McCabe as Sir John Newton, Simon Nader as the Lord Mayor, and Nemini Stone as Richard II. And I've been your host, Robert Crichton.
Sir Newton and Lord Mayor, this wrong that I am offered, this open and unnatural injury, a king to be thus hardly handled of his own people and no other foes. But such as have been brought up and bred in his own bosom, nourished with his tender care, to be thus robbed of honour and of friends, thus daunted with continual frights and fears, hailed unto what mishap I cannot tell. More hard mishap than had of like been mine, had I not marked been to be a king.
It shall become your grace, most gracious lord, to bear the mind in this afflicted time as other kings and lords have done before. Armed with sufferance and magnanimity, the one to make you resolute for chance, the other forward in your resolution. The greatest wrong this rout hath done your grace, amongst many other wicked parts, is in frighting your worthy lady mother, making foul slaughter of your noblemen, burning up
books and matters of records, defacing houses of hostility, St. John's in Smithfield, the Savoy and such like, and beating down, like wolves, the better sort. The greatest wrong, in my opinion, is that in honour doth your person touch. I mean, they call your majesty to parley, and overbear you with a multitude as if you were a vassal, not a king. Oh, wretched minds of violent, barbarous men, for whom the heavens have secret rack in store! But, my lord, with reverence and with pardon too, why comes your grace into Smithfield near the crew, unarmed and guarded with so small a train?
If clemency may win their raging minds to civil order, I'll approve it first. They shall perceive a coming quiet wise, accompanied with the Lord Mayor here alone, besides our guard that doth attend on us.
May it please your grace that I shall raise the streets to guard your majesty through Smithfield as you walk?
No, Lord Mayor, 'twill make them more outrageous and be a mean to shed a world of blood. I more account the blood of Englishmen than so. But this is the place I have appointed them to hear them speak, and have adventured to come among this foul unruly crew. And lo, my lord, see where the people comes.
My masters, this is the king. Come away, 'tis he that we would speak withal.
Newton, desire that one may speak for all to tell the sum of their demand at full.
My masters, you that are the especial men, his majesty requires you all by me that one may speak and tell him your demand. And gently here he lets you know by me he is resolved to hear him all at large.
Aye, good, my friends, I pray you heartily. Tell us your minds as madly as you can, and we will answer you so well to all, as you shall not mislike in anything.
We come to revenge your officer's ill demeanour, and though we have killed him for his knavery, now we be gotten together, we will have wealth and liberty!
Wealth and liberty!
It is enough, believe me, if you will. For as I am your true succeeding prince, I swear by all the honour of my crown, you shall have liberty and pardon all, as God have given it and your lawful king.
Ere we'll be pinched with poverty to dig our meat and victuals from the ground that are as worthy of good maintenance as any gentleman your grace doth keep. We will be kings and lords within ourselves and not abide the pride of tyranny.
I pray thee, fellow, what countryman art thou?
It skills not much. I am an Englishman.
Marry, sir, he is a Kentishman and hath been my scholar ere now.
Little good manners hath the villain learned to use his lord and king so barbarously.
Well, people, ask you any more than to be free and have your liberty?
Wealth and liberty!
Then take my word, I promise it to you all, and hear my general pardon now forthwith. Under seal and letters patents to perform the same. Let every man betake him to his home. And with what speed our clerks can make dispatch, your pardons and your letters patents shall be forthwith sent down in every shire.
Marry, I thank your grace. Ob Carter and the Essex men will home again, and we take your word.
We believe you all, and thank you all. And presently we will commandment give, that all this business may be quickly ready.
I tell thee what, this is not that I would have. I come for more than to be answered thus. And if the Essex men will needs be gone, content. Let them go suck their mams at home. I came for spoil, and spoil I'll have.
Do what thou wilt, Jack. I will follow thee.
How? And if it be to the gallows?
Why? That is the worst.
And faith that is, sure, but if you will be ruled by me, trust not to his pardon, for you die. Every mother's son, but captains, go forward, as we have begun.
My masters, the boy speaks wisely. I've read this in Cato. Ad concilium anticum vocaris. Take good counsel while it is given.
Content, boy. We will be ruled by thee.